So let's talk about the first one, which is the business to consumer model. Now, first, this is easy to understand because most businesses are B2C. Talk about Amazon, talk about Flipkart, talk about Nykaa, Myntra, Lenskart, or even other businesses, non-e-commerce businesses, are all B2C, businesses selling to consumer. This is the largest segment in terms of volume or the number of transactions. In terms of value, B2B and B2G, the average order value, the average transaction value would be huge compared to B2C, but in terms of volume of transactions, number of orders or number of buyers, B2C is the largest segment. So here you have a clear target market, shorter sales cycle because there's no hierarchy to decide on the buying process. At most, people discuss with friends and family. So sales cycle is shorter. There's a potential for emotional and impulse purchases, right? You browse something, you see an ad and you may buy as an individual, but as a business or as a government, you may not do that because you may have a process to seek approvals, evaluate products, compare prices, and then make a purchase. So here in B2C, there is a potential for emotional and impulse purchases. Then lower risk and costs of entry, the barriers of entries are few. Then mass consumer media marketing strategy, you could use Facebook, Instagram, and other channels for marketing to customers because you're selling B2C. And then customers are more price sensitive. So these are some features of a B2C business model. A B2B business model in comparison is more complex because you're now targeting businesses where there is a hierarchy. Every purchase has a clear need. There's an approval process. There's a comparison process. Maybe there is a tendering process, an RFP process. So it's a more complex business model. Hence, the sales cycle is longer, right? From asking for information to evaluation, proof of concept, testing, buying, and even the payment may be deferred. Some companies have a 30-day payment policy, a 60-day payment policy. The sales cycle is much longer compared to a B2C business model. Then there are few purchases that are based on emotion or impulse buying. As I said, there is a process that needs to be followed. Hence, very rare instances of impulse buying. You need to have a niche marketing strategy focused on trade channels, channels where business customers come to look for products. So an Instagram or Facebook or social may not be the best marketing channel for B2B or B2G e-commerce businesses. Then you have less price sensitivity. Rates are more uniform across suppliers. There's more revenue per sale. The average order value is comparatively much higher to a B2C average order value. Customers demand more data. They really want to know who you've done business with, who are your customers, what has been your past success rate, your quality, and everything else. They may ask for certifications as well. Do you follow industry standard certifications? And there will be multiple users and user IDs. The same customer, the same buying entity could have multiple users and multiple user IDs. Then you have the third model, which is consumer to consumer. So here, there's no intermediary. I can sell to you, you can sell to me using WhatsApp, using Instagram, using Facebook. So there could be multiple ways that an individual sells to an individual. The reach is wider, but usually it's restricted. You only reach out to your friends, family, or common people within a network. And there's a low transaction cost. There could be some haggling as well, negotiations as well, but it's consumer to consumer. So no legal restrictions as such. It doesn't really get noticed, but there are brands who now want to leverage on this. As I mentioned about Meesho, is a social commerce company that lets individuals sell their products to other individuals. This is a third business model. And then we have the fourth one, which is B2G, or businesses selling to governments or government organizations. So this refers to selling directly to a government, maybe a central government, a state government, a ministry, or government organizations or agencies. Now, B2G networks or models provide a way for businesses to bid on government projects or products that governments might purchase. For example, if a government agency wants to replace computer systems for their 500 employees, but there will be a tendering process, and as a company, you may want to bid for it. So it's not entirely e-commerce, but as an e-commerce company, you can still bid for it and sell to government agencies. So the sales process is much longer, the payment cycle may be even longer, and you will need to follow certain guidelines and certain prerequisites to be able to participate in a government auction or a bidding process. Now, after business models, we move on to how do you find a product or service to sell. So you want to start a new e-commerce company. How do you find products, right? So it could be physical goods that you want to sell. You want to sell laptops, you want to sell t-shirts, you want to sell mobile accessories, for example, or you want to sell digital goods, you want to sell software, right? You want to sell CRM solutions, you want to sell ERP systems, or you want to sell an email marketing software, or you want to sell services, you want to sell marketing as a service, you want to sell accounting as a service. So you could either sell products, physical goods, you could sell digital products, or you could sell services. And how do you find these? So first, you need to understand that the e-commerce product model could again be different categories. First, it could be a single category, it could be multiple category, it could be affiliate, or it could be in hybrid, which is a mix of single category plus affiliate. So single category is you selling only a single category of products. For example, you only sell, let's say, for example, custom printed t-shirts. That's the only category you deal in. Multiple category means you sell products across categories. An example is simple as an Amazon or a Flipkart. They sell anything and everything from grocery to electronics to apparel to toys and books. Then affiliate, where you don't really have inventory and you don't manage logistics, you just sell on somebody else's behalf and you get a commission per sale. Or it could be a hybrid business model for your product or services. So single category, multiple category, affiliate model, or a hybrid product model. Now, when it comes to product sourcing, there could again be multiple options. First is drop shipping. Drop shipping is where you have your own e-commerce website or an app, or even you could take orders maybe on WhatsApp or Facebook, and you pass on the order details to the manufacturer or distributor, who then fulfills and delivers the product to the customer. So you don't maintain inventory, you don't manage the supply chain, you don't manage the logistics. All you do is you are a selling face for a manufacturer or a distributor. You only collect orders and payments and you pass it on to the manufacturer or distributor or seller to go ahead and fulfill the order. So it's easier to start. All you need is a website or an app or a profile where customers can come and place orders. So you only have to look after marketing and collection of online payments. Then it could be wholesale and warehousing. So that's another business model or product sourcing model where you are a wholesaler and maybe you manage your own warehouse. Or third option is you go for private labeling, right? Maybe you have a design and you go and you hire a contractor, a manufacturer on contract who manufactures the product as per your design specifications with your brand label. So it's your design, your specifications, but you give it to a manufacturing company and they make it for you. So all big companies like Apple or Samsung, they all have contract manufacturers who manufacture for them. Even Apple companies like other major companies, they have manufacturers with written contracts who manufacture as per their design and quality specifications, and it's labeled as per the brand. That's called private labeling. Then you also have something known as white labeling. Now, white labeling means already available design specifications which are labeled as per your brand. So here, the design does not belong to you. The specification does not belong to you. The products are made without any branding And then you could choose to get your own brand on those products, be it physical or be it digital. So the same design specifications could then be sold to multiple sellers with their respective brands. In private labeling, it's your own design specifications. So the manufacturer under contract makes a product as per your specifications only and only for your brand. Those designs are not leaked to any other seller or any other company. That's the difference in private labeling and white labeling. Then you have the option of make in-house, where you manufacture your own products. And then you could have subscription e-commerce as a model, where you act as a marketplace or an aggregator. So in all these business models, the entire logistics and supply chain will be very different. Now let's talk about drop shipping. Now, drop shipping, as I said, lets you set up a storefront and take orders and money from the customer if it is online payment. The rest is then left to your supplier. It could be a manufacturer or it could be a distributor. So this frees you from managing inventory, warehousing stock, or dealing with packaging and shipping. That's being taken care of by the distributor. All you have to do is maintain a digital storefront, bring customers to your website, and collect orders. So if your sellers are slow, product quality is lower than expected, or there are problems with the order, then the customer comes to you with the complaints. So who do you choose to work with is important, but dropshipping as a business model relieves you of major operational challenges like managing inventory, warehousing, or the entire logistics. Now, the biggest benefit to dropshipping is the ability to offer a large selection of products without purchasing or manufacturing. So, example, apparel, footwear, electronic appliances. You don't have to manufacture or store products. You just need to tie up with manufacturers and distributors and list those products on your website. And that's all that you have to manage in a drop shipping business. What you get is a commission or a markup value per transaction. Now, after drop shipping, we'll talk about wholesale and warehousing. Now, this is where you buy products in bulk and then you store it in a warehouse and then you list them on your website and app and you sell to customers. So what you don't do is you don't manufacture the products yourself. So buying wholesale is a simple and straightforward process. You buy your inventory from other brands, manufacturers, or from a middleman supplier at a discounted wholesale rate, which then you in turn resell at a higher price. So you add a markup value to it and then you sell to customers directly. But here, as a seller, apart from manufacturing, you manage the entire process like inventory, storage, logistics, and the last mile delivery and the payments collection. Now, buying wholesale is comparatively at a lower risk business model compared to manufacturing for a few reasons. You don't have to really worry about raw material, pricing, manufacturing in time, defects while manufacturing. So that part is taken care of. It starts from buying and storing products in bulk. Some examples in this category, the common examples are kitchen appliances or sporting goods. So these are usually where companies buy in bulk. Importantly, because these generally don't go out of fashion, right? Compared to apparel, where you have new designs or new trends every season, a sporting good does not go out of fashion, right? A cricket bat remains a cricket bat for the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, until there is a major modification in the design for cricket bats. So the storage cycle is longer, hence the risk is lower. You don't run out of the shorter time frame compared to apparel or for example, mobile accessories. Now, if you are into a business of mobile accessories, for example, if you are a mobile case seller, your entire storage cycle could only last as long as the respective mobile model is in business. As a company launches a new model, the mobile case for the previous model goes out of business. So in some categories, buying wholesale and maintaining a large inventory could not be of value. So it works for certain categories like kitchen appliances and sport goods, where the design specification and the trends don't change every year or every few years. The third option, as we said, is private labeling, where you have your own design and quality specifications, but you don't want to manufacture yourself. You don't want to set up your own factory, your machinery, or hire people and manufacture goods, but you go to an existing manufacturer who has a factory, machinery, manpower, has the requisite certifications to manufacture products, and you share your design specifications, your quality specifications. For example, if you're manufacturing t-shirts, then what fabric do you need, the color combinations, the entire process, and then they manufacture on behalf of you, which you then go back and sell to your customers. So companies that manufacture products offsite for sale send their plans or prototypes to a contracted manufacturer who produces the product to meet customer specifications. So mobile brands do that, right? For example, companies like Xiaomi or OnePlus, they sell their plans and prototypes to their local manufacturers in India or Vietnam or other countries where they manufacture as per the design specifications. And hence, this is called private labeling. Different to private labeling is white labeling, where as a seller, you don't have your own prototype or design specification. You buy an existing design category from a manufacturer or a supplier. So in white labeling, you choose a product that is already successfully sold by some other company under their own brand name. So the product remains the same, it's only the brand label that changes. So you make your own label, the manufacturer would attach your brand label to the product, and then you could sell it as your own product. But in terms of design, quality, specifications, it's no different from what's being sold by some other e-commerce or even non-e-commerce seller. And then finally, we have a make-in-house option where you manufacture it yourself. So making your product is a common approach for many hobbyists. For example, handicrafts, they want to make their own products. So whether it be jewelry, fashion, or maybe natural beauty products like soaps, making products yourself allows for the precise control over the quality and the brand, but also comes with the cost of high time commitment and scalability, right? Raw material, the entire processing, it all becomes your part of your business operations. So the primary costs associated with making your own products include the purchasing of raw materials, the storage of inventory, both for raw materials and finished goods, and also the labor, the manpower required for making your own products. Then the most important thing to note is that not all products can be made by hand. So you would need machinery as well. So your product choices are limited to your skills and available if you are running a small scale manufacturing company for your e-commerce website. But as I said, some hobbyists or artistics like jewelry or handmade cosmetics or soaps or maybe a home decor items, they make it in-house because it's their own design, it's their own art, but it remains small scale. To make it a large scale enterprise, then they need to hire more manpower, source more raw material, manage inventory. But again, for some categories, this may be the best business model when it comes to your e-commerce venture. And then you have subscription e-commerce. Some of the e-commerce companies rely on a subscription model that delivers customers products, like a box of products, at regular intervals, right? For example, shaving product companies have started this, have used this, where they deliver shaving products every month or every quarter to subscribers. This usually works for services or digital products, but has already been tested by physical products as well. For example, maybe you could be a cookie making company, right? You make cookies, for example, and you may hire or you may acquire customers who want to receive a box of cookies maybe every fortnight or every month. So you only acquire customers once and they subscribe to regular shipments of your products. What this helps is you don't have to sell again and again, but you get a long-term commitment from your customers, and in turn, even you could offer them discounts for regular purchase. For example, for every 5 months of purchase, you could give a 6-month free. So subscription pricing works both for the buyer and seller. The buyer, once they know what they're getting into, the quality, the delivery, and if they are anyways going to buy the product or service every month or every year, it makes sense for them to sign up for a subscription. As I said, it's very common for services, but even digital product companies are testing this because it works as a good customer retention strategy. Once a customer signs up, in some cases, they pay in advance because they get discounts or an extra month free. It also helps with cash flow, and definitely it helps with your customer retention. Then we come to, how do you want to compete? Right now you have a business strategy, you know your business model, you figured out your product sourcing and logistics, but how do you want to compete in your category, be it price, quality, selection of products, or maybe a wider range of designs, of brands, or any value-added services or benefits? So how do you want to compete? Price, quality, selection, value add, or service? So first you need to understand what is important for your customer. So depending upon what your business model is and who your target customer is, how do you want to compete with them? So first let's talk about price. The competition on price is typically not the best option for smaller retailers because you don't have the benefit of a large scale of operations, right? Somebody manufacturing 100,000 t-shirts can have a lower cost per unit compared to someone only manufacturing, say, 1,000 t-shirts. So smaller retailers lose out to bigger competitors when they try to compete on price, because larger manufacturers or somebody who buys in bulk have better margins per unit, and hence they can go lower and price their products lower for their customers. So it's difficult to compete being a small e-commerce company with larger competitors primarily on price differentiation. This also in the bigger picture leads to price wars that just eat away at everyone's margins. As competitors try and lower the price to acquire more customers, it forces everybody to start reducing prices, and it makes a price war, which eventually does not serve the entire industry. It's good for the consumer, but even for the consumer, quality in the long term suffers. Hence, price is always not the best option, but for some categories and maybe for quick gain of consumers and market growth, this could be a strategy. For example, Flipkart's initial strategy was on offering deep discounts. This was to bring more and more customers online, especially because their target market was tier 2 and tier 3 cities. Then, if not price, then you could choose to compete on quality, the quality of your products. Now, competing on quality comes down to having a superior or better made product. So whether you make it yourself or you buy for a supplier, then you have to be a quality conscious seller. You only choose and sell the best quality products to your customers, but this may come at a higher price. So this can be a great way to compete, and there are signs of the market is shifting towards long-lasting and well-made products. Customers are becoming more conscious and they want to buy better quality products. So this works, but your entire sourcing strategy has to work well in order to be able to provide better quality products to your customers. Now, example could be Big Basket, which sells online grocery, and their mission is to sell best quality products. They want to compete by offering high quality products, but even in this category, now there is more competition, right? Now there are other grocery players competing with Big Basket who are providing equal quality of products. So when you compete on quality, you always have to keep on improving, because other competitors, existing and new entrants, could surely catch up until unless it's a very niche category. So price and quality are two parameters that you can compete on, then you could choose to provide value-added services. If price is not a differentiator, if quality is more or less same, then how do you differentiate your company? So value-added services could be another. For example, for e-commerce companies, it could be the time to delivery. Quick commerce is an example, right? If you buy today from some companies, they are promising delivery within 10 minutes or 20 minutes compared to other competitors who deliver within, say, 30 or 40 minutes. So you get the same products, maybe at the same price or a slightly higher price, but you get better timeliness. And that's a value-adding feature. That could be another category where you could compete on price, quality, and value-added services. So answering these four major questions will provide you a good start to your e-commerce business strategy. Once you've figured out your market segments, your pricing models, your product models, you should be able to answer these four broad questions to be able to get a good start at your e-commerce strategy. First is your business model. As we discussed, who do you want to sell it to? Is it B2C? Is it B2B? Or do you want to use the C2C business channel? Or you only sell to governments or government agencies? Then, how do you find products? Your product sourcing concepts, so your customer segment, your category, and how do you find products will define and will dictate how do you source products, and then finally, how do you compete? So these four points that we discussed make the entire core of your e-commerce business strategy. Who do you sell to? How do you sell to? How do you source products or services? Do you make it in-house? Do you use private labeling or white labeling? Or do you use the wholesale and warehousing strategy? And then finally, how do you want to compete to acquire more customers and sell again and again to your customers? So again, do you compete on price? Do you compete on quality? Or do you compete on value-added services? Now, when it comes to strategy, you need to have both a short-term strategy and a long-term strategy. A short-term strategy or a near-term strategy is about starting your business, but you will always have certain short-term goals, right? Goals for the next quarter or certain objectives that you want to achieve in a year or in a six-month period. But you always also have a long-term strategy. What do you want to achieve, say, in 5 years or in 10 years? So short-term strategy and long-term strategy. Short-term business strategy should be a subset of your overall long-term business plan. Where do you want to be, say, in 5 years? For example, today, if you want to start a new e-commerce startup and you want to be a unicorn in, say, 7 years, then what do you want to achieve in the first 3 months or first 6 months? So it's a subset of your long-term business plan. So you could call it more like an operational strategy or an operational plan, a set of activities that you need to complete to achieve short-term goals and eventually take your business towards your long-term business objective or mission. So having short-term strategy without a long-term strategy would result in a lack of direction. And because every short-term plan should lead you towards a common long-term mission. You cannot have multi-directional short-term strategies because then your business will be everywhere and nowhere. So short-term strategy should be aligned to your long-term vision or your five-year business plan. By combining these two planning components, short-term and long-term, a company can set a general path based on the values, the goals, and the objectives which you decide when you start your business. So let's look at some of the details of what to be included in your short-term e-commerce strategy. Now first, you need to have a startup to scale up phase of the business. So you plan to start a new e-commerce website. So you start up your business, you test the initial response, customer behavior, your initial success or failure, and then how do you plan to scale up to reach a wider market or wider customer base. The scale-up cycle, the business faces tremendous amounts of challenges, obstacles, building of systems and processes, and customer acceptance or rejections, and also trade objections. Now, this is the phase where your business idea and your plan actually gets tested for the first time. Before this, the everything was on paper, right? Or maybe on PowerPoint slides. But this is a testing period when you actually face competition, investors, and customers. So this is a testing time for the demographics. Who do you want to reach? So which of the geographical market should be operated as a first trial market? If you want to be a pan-India company, where should you run a trial first? That depends on a lot of factors. For example, there are some startup hubs in India, Bengaluru, Delhi, NCR, Mumbai, and most startups start from one of these startup hubs because they have access to resources. For example, there's a network of startup founders. You have easier access to tech experts, marketing experts, and even customers there are more ready or willing to try on new products because they are used to being first-hand users of new companies, new products. So how do you decide where or which geographical market should you choose for your first trial? That's going to be the test of your business plan and business strategy. And basis that test, the results of the pilot or the test run, you will fine-tune your entire strategy. So fine-tuning the market research, is this the real opportunity? Does a short-term trial validate your business mission and objectives? If not, can you fine-tune the entire plan and opportunities and the mission? Then you have a short-term go-to-market strategy. How do you reach customers and sell to them in the target geography? So a call is to be taken while identifying which special product category or services should be selected. You don't want to go in all in with all the categories. So you want to go in with maybe limited products, limited categories in a limited market, and you need to have a marketing strategy to go and reach those customers. Then how do you measure the rate of success in your short-term strategy? It is important to visualize the profitability in short-term and long-term operations. Now in short-term operations, you may have a lower profitability because maybe you're offering deep discounts to acquire more customers. Your cost per unit is higher because of lower number of transactions, but you need to have a clear vision and you should be able to visualize the profitability both in your short-term and long-term operations. So adopting lean and low-cost operations, so be more agile, be willing and be able to pivot your strategy as basis the feedback received from your customers, your investors, and stakeholders. Then your core and mid-management team retention is important because once you move into the implementation execution phase and the real test begins, even your team gets a real taste of the execution and they start to visualize whether this is aligned to their business goals and their career goals. But how do you keep them on the same page? How do you keep them passionate, motivated, and how do you retain them? Then your competitive strategy and your marketing strategy. These also get tested and accordingly you need to adapt and make changes. And how do you ensure cost control so that you're able to achieve your profitability goals? Then after your short term, let's talk about the long-term strategy, which is primarily about sustaining your business and growing your business. So a long-term strategy should include the following. First, tried and tested business model. You get the inputs from this, from your short-term strategy and your pilot testing, your trial run. Then you need to have a fine-tuned product portfolio. After your short-term success and your trials, you know what products work well for your customer segment, the price point, the design options. So you need to now have a fine-tuned product portfolio. Your sourcing strategy is now more robust because you know what works, right? From sourcing to delivery, basis of competing in the market, who are your competitors, and are you competing with them on price, on quality, on value-added services, or maybe a mix of two or three of these, the investment that you would need to achieve your long-term goals and your marketing strategy, and you need to have your financial projections ready. How much cash you would burn in the next 3 years or 5 years, how many customers would you acquire, how would it affect your average order value, your revenue, and your profitability. So all that needs to be clear when you put together your long-term strategy. You need to have a tried and tested business model as you move towards the scalability and growth phase. So finalize your business model for growth for at least 3 to 5 years. Then you need to have an effectiveness of the product strategy. Is the product strategy working fine? What are the star products to focus? Which products offer great margins? And those are the ones that you need to promote to acquire customers. Now, when it comes to your product sourcing strategy, it depends upon the cost effectiveness of the available option. That will help you define and finalize the sourcing strategy. Who do you buy from? Where do you buy from? How often do you buy from? Be it raw materials or be it finished goods. Then, how do you compete in the market? Price, quality, or service, or a combination of these put together? And how much investment is required for your growth phase? So how much investment in terms of marketing and customer service, logistics, inventory, manpower would you need to move from, say, 1,000 customers to 100,000 customers? So once you are able to visualize that, you'll be able to talk to your investors or manage your cash flow to fund the growth phase of your e-commerce company. And how do you want to keep marketing your business? So what's your long-term marketing strategy? Now, during short-term strategy implementation, the product portfolio is small, the market segment is small, and the budget required to acquire customers is also small. But in the long-term strategy finalization, the product portfolio seems to be expanding. You want to add more categories, more selection options for the customers, and the business is also spreading geographically, where you would have slightly different user behavior. So your cost of acquisition per customer will also increase. So how do you plan to keep reaching a wider audience? That's your marketing strategy. So the marketing team will like to use new techniques to keep on acquiring customers, and also new techniques to engage your existing customers. So develop a pricing and positioning strategy, optimize your distribution and fulfillment plan, and create a cross-channel strategy. Don't rely on a single channel when looking to grow your business. You want to test different channels and finally arrive at a combination of channels that work best for your category and your target customer segment. Then you also need to outline your financial projections for the next 3 to 5 years. So do a final summary of all the expenses incurred from each of the previous sections, as well as their projected growth rates and timelines. For example, if you are projecting your manpower cost, your salary cost will increase per year. You also need to hire more people. You may start to need spending more on your marketing campaigns. You also need to understand that raw material prices may increase. Your logistics cost will increase based on fuel prices. So all that has to be factored into your financial projections in your long-term strategy. These will provide solid guidelines for developing your overall long-term strategy, and that lets you understand, your investors understand, how cash healthy or cash positive your business can be expected to be in the long term. So as you progress through the year, work on this document and create parallel documents to track the success failure. So keep checking how close are you to your financial projections and make changes as and when required. So that's about setting up business strategy for your e-commerce business. Not having a strategy makes it more risky. The probability of failure is a little higher. Having a strategy gives you a strong platform to know what you're getting into and how do you want to succeed. So finalizing an e-commerce strategy is not simple, but these guidelines would help you and the rewards are certainly great. Now, there are a lot of elements that must be considered, researched, prodded, and hence having a documented strategy that you can always refer, go back to, understand the gap and deviations, help you make amendments and improvements to be better prepared for the next phase of growth in your business. So an effective strategy focuses on the areas where you get the most returns, be it your target customers, your product portfolio, or your marketing channels, and the strategy for sourcing raw material or products. And hence, your business strategy document, short-term and long-term, put together become the basis for growth of your business. It helps to focus your limited resources on the most important and productive activities of the business. Hence, have clear answers to first your business model, how do you want to sell to consumers or to businesses, what are your going to be your channels, how do you want to source your products, your marketing strategy, and how do you want to compete and how do you want to position your company, your brand for your customers to keep bringing them back to buy more from you. Thank you.